police surveillance has been going on for about 10 years already, which produced this report of a meeting of a debate with a Labour MP called Rob Brown. And in fact, the person that made the report didn't seem to fall into the category of being stupid, because he seemed to think that Coleman got the better of the debate with his MP Rob Brown, or somebody Brown. Anyway, Dan will know more about this. Ron Brown, I think. He was a bit of a maverick left-wing MP. Anyway, anybody want to, I can see a hand up. Ah, Andy. Not Andrew that met Howard.
I think Paddy was first.
Okay, Paddy. Yeah, Yeah, Paddy, if you want to come.
Just a very quick comment on that. But that was really interesting, Howard. But I just thought you'd also want to include infiltration by media, by journalists. I know from personal experience that there have been times when, individuals have been present at certain actions and nobody knew who they were, and they disappeared before the end, and it turned out they were working for the Daily Express, things like that. So it isn't just, state surveillance that's going on. There's also, journalists trying to get scoops. But I mean, that was just all I was going to say. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right about that, Paddy. I'm sure you are. Yeah. No, I didn't attempt to cover that because I don't know much about it.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, thanks, Howard. That was really entertaining, actually. I sort of really enjoyed it in a peculiar sort of way. At the moment, I'm really enjoying reading really quite lightweight Victorian crime novels based on there's a series called The Railway Detective by an author called Edward Marston. And, the scenario that you described with my namesake, Andrew, that turned up at your terraced house and your wife was eavesdropping and so on, that was just so reminiscent to what, is described in some of these novels, So I'm sort of, on one hand, I'm thinking, oh, Howard, that's really entertaining. Is that a plot twist? Is it a red herring? What is it, or is it something more sinister? All I can say, my own personal experience as well, and we've probably all got some, is I do remember being filmed can only have been state agents at one of the G, I think it was the G4 or G5 or something like that, things that used to go on. This is like 30-odd years ago in Birmingham. And I had a camera shoved right in my face and I was threatened, carry on with that and you'll never get a job, this sort of rhetoric. I'm sure that was Special Branch, I always remember that. So, hey-ho, I've got no doubt that we've been infiltrated. We probably still are, if ever there was any sort of potential for any sort of shift to happen in the political sort of atmosphere, there's no doubt we would be infiltrated. I know that other left-wing groups have been. David Yaffe told me a long time ago the RCG found that there were police infiltrating them and members, that was all part of the International Socialist sort of offshoot from the SWP, RCG, etc., with the same people, really. Anyway, thanks.
Adam, is it okay if I jump in here? I can't find the hands up symbol.
Okay, yeah, jump in.
Just very, very, very quickly. It might sound a bit sort of silly, but I'd be quite flattered if we were being spied on. It would actually mean that we were being given some sort of kudos and importance. And, they thought that we were worth looking into because we were actually a threat to the status quo. I mean, you might think that's a bit of a facile thing to say, but, you know, I feel quite flattered by that, if it's true. That's it.
Yeah, I must say, I was a bit disappointed that we weren't mentioning David Coutts' book. given that there's so much redaction and so much sort of not released, that it's perfectly possible that in the future somebody will use that material, and we will find more detail about what, which will show that we were being looked at as well.
Okay, first Darren, and then Darren.
Hi. I'm interested in talking about. I'm not really sure how to initially respond to it. I mean, a couple of points I would make. I guess we are kind of unique in a sense that because we're seen from the outside as part of the left, which we're really not, even though we share some of the same terminology. Obviously, because of that, we have maybe a kind of unique position in terms of like how we consider revolutionary transformation, because we are like, you know, peaceful if we can, you know, forceful if we must. That means we don't sort of indulge in this rhetoric of violence or even sort of participate in political violence. And that's possibly the reason, you know, why we've never really been seen as a security threat. Despite their incompetence, despite the fact that these organize, these departments are probably bloated, and sometimes they just have to justify their budgets by sending people into organizations, even when they know there's no reason for them really to be properly investigated. Et cetera, but. We can kind of laugh at it. It's kind of comical. But two things. One is political violence is on the rise. In Britain, and extremist violence rather. There has been politicians who have been murdered, assassinated in Britain. So that gives the security services of countries. Reason enough to like look at certain organizations, or maybe it's more religious extremists now. But secondly, I think the other separate thing to consider is the role of agents provocateurs, that have, been used by the state in a lot of these organizations. Because, I generally don't think, I think, groups like the Trotskyists, most mainstream Trotskyists are really just like left-wing laborites. To my mind, the members, I don't really think they genuinely believe in violence. But I think what happens is because they are seen as like extremists. I think there has been occasions in the past, and I don't know if Kurt mentions this in his book, where possibly the state has sent in, not just people to spy, but also to be the provocateurs, the ones to like suggest, the spectacular, the ones to suggest the violence, etc. I don't think you have to be a conspiracy theorist to think that's implausible. That these people have existed, and they've obviously existed in other countries. Just one other thing. So I think in that sense, as much as we can kind of scoff at some of this, I think that is a serious thing to take into account. With regards to the party and how the party feels a wee bit kind of left out. It's purely anecdotal, but I've always found it curious that one of the first people to ever be considered selected as a parliamentary candidate for the SPGB was a guy called Frank Granger, and this was before the Second World War in East Ham. The party did a lot of work. They'd selected a seat, I think it was East Ham North, and they were doing a lot of preparatory work for when the general election was supposed to be, which was like 1940, and obviously war intervened, so there wasn't a general election until 1945, and a lot of things had happened since then. But what was interesting about Granger is that the guy who'd been a long-term SPGBer actually dropped out the party and actually left the party. This was the first parliamentary candidate, and ended up being a lecturer for the Economic Week. Some people probably are aware of the Economic League. And he was, So I always kind of thought that was kind of interesting why maybe he suddenly did, you know, was it just purely, you know, poverty that sort of prompted him to do this, you know, because that's understandable, that happens. Or if maybe he himself was maybe someone who was at some point sort of turned. So I think that's a kind of interesting thing, taking into account about the party and the party's history. And probably if documents go back far enough, I'm sure, you know, the early party history, I'm sure there was, you know, people like attending meetings, you know, infiltration, etc. You know, maybe just the passage of time, maybe people just realise at this point we're no longer the threat that maybe we once were in our early history, you know, to the authorities. Cheers. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Okay, Jarvis, you're on.
Oh, am I? Oh, yeah. Is my microphone turned on? Jolly good. I want, first of all, then, to thank you for a fabulous talk. Brought back a lot of memories, particularly when you mentioned the insurance salesman coming round. I was, back in the early 80s, very happily married as a child myself, and we used to have a guy come round from the Prudential to collect our premiums for our house insurance. My grandmother, incidentally, used to say, Jarvis, you've got ideas above your station. You can't afford house insurance. Well, I could. Anyway, in 1985, I became properly politically active. I mentioned earlier that I've been reading the Socialist Standard since the age of 11 because my father had a massive interest in the party and used to make me read Socialist Standards. And if I didn't want to read them, he'd read them to me as bedtime stories. I read the Communist Manifesto before I read anything by C.S. Lewis. That was my father. But the Prudential guy came round at the point where I first joined the party in 1985. And I'd recently become literature secretary at Birmingham branch. And so the living room was suddenly full of socialist pamphlets. And the little guy, I forget his name, he was much older than us, we were in our 20s, would express an interest. He'd say, what's this all about then? Socialism, what's that about? And so we'd sit and talk to him. This is when you invited your insurance salesman in for a cup of tea, if you were civilised as we were. I don't think he was working for MI5. I just think he was genuinely interested in collecting our premiums and would do anything to get our premiums. A year later, I went to Firkroft College. Most members of a certain age will know what Firkroft College means. For the 2 years I was there on the first part-time course that they did back in 1986. Everybody was convinced that there were at least two MI5 moles in the college. I didn't see any evidence for that. But one of the things that really amused me, Howard, about your talk was the way that you quote Mark Steele. I'm a bit of a Mark Steele fanboy, by the way. Not a socialist like us, but he does good work. The ineptitude displayed by people who are hired by the ruling class, who incidentally, as you all know, are the only class in society successfully waging class war at the moment, pay workers to spy on workers. It's just not going to work, is it? One final point about anecdotal evidence. Shortly after I became literature secretary at Birmingham branch, I started hearing a click on my phone when I picked it up. Was my phone being tapped? I don't know. Anecdotal evidence can't be dismissed that simply. That's pretty much all I've got to say for the moment, except to say that it's important to note that we, revolutionary socialists, are the only threat to national security in the sense that we oppose the existence of all nations. They should be looking more closely at us. Our strength, of course, is that we don't have leaders and they can't take one of us out and close down the organisation. Anyway, thanks again for a great talk, Howard.
Okay, thanks. You wanted to speak again, Darren? Your hand went up and it, no, okay. Nobody else want to say anything?
Should I just say a word or two about things that have been said, Adam?
Yes.
Okay. Just say a word or two about a couple of things. I remember there was a period when I was hearing clicks on phones, Jarvis, as well. Yeah. Who knows? Adam mentioned, you mentioned, Adam, this inquiry that's going on. Yeah. What happened was, I think Mark Steele brought that up in his programme. In 2014, the then Prime Minister, the Conservative Prime Minister, can't think of a name now, Theresa May, she initiated an inquiry into sort of confidentiality, as it were, which was largely about the extent to which people were being spied on by the police. It's still going. 11 years later, it's still going, and they're still calling witnesses, and there's no sign that it will end anytime soon. So maybe to that extent, there's sort of less of that going on now because it's being sort of, you know, there's a formal investigation taking place, public investigation. But that's a long-standing thing, which you know, one can find out a lot about just by looking on the internet, for example. I'll stop there now for the moment. Anybody else got their hand? I noticed Brian has got his hand up, but here we are.
Okay, Brian.
Yeah, I just like to point out that MI5 focused their attention just not on the political left, but also the political right. They don't distinguish between political ideologies, no distinction whatsoever. They just look into it, you know, like Darren said, you know, to justify their income, and that's it.
Just to say in response to that, if I may, Adam, that I'm sure Brian is right about what's going on now, but traditionally, throughout the 20th century, certainly since the Second World War, there's not been much of a political right. You know, the Tory Party was more or less as sort of right-wing as you got. A few other individuals, a few other very small groups, but they weren't really threatening the status quo. What they were doing was just sort of making a fuss about, you know, things like patriotism and immigration and stuff like that. So although I think Brian is right that these days they probably don't differentiate that much, in reality, throughout the 20th century, it's mainly been about the political left or organisations that the powers that be thought were part of the political left.
Okay, I see there's three hands up, four hands up. I think the first one was Richard and then Dougie. Richard.
Oh, hi, yeah. Just another sort of anecdotal story. When I first joined the party in something like 1975, something like that, I used to come up to head office at the end of the month to help post out the Socialist Standard. And I used to work with a member there, a female. Her name was Heather? I don't think it was Heather Ball, but I can't remember her name fully, but I think her name was Heather. And she used to tell me that a couple of years previously, she was quite convinced that she'd been sort of tailed around London for about 3 to 4 weeks by somebody. She didn't know who. And then it just suddenly just stopped happening. So, and she said that she thought a couple of other members had had a similar experience just at about that time. So, I mean, I don't know what you make of that, but that's just a story that I came across. But if anybody is actually interested in this, I was quite interested. I looked up, when Howard was talking, I looked up Coates' book, and I actually found there's another book by somebody called Knox, who was dealing with the same subject matter. I'm not quite sure from what perspective up and from the 1930s up to 1956. So if anybody is interested, just to kind of throw that into the pot. Okay, thanks. That's all from me.
I think you were talking about Heather Williams, who was the librarian at the time. Should we go to Freddie first then?
Okay, I think, can you hear us, Dougie?
Yes, I can hear you.
Well, see if there was any reaction from Dougie there. Yeah, I mean, like a few other contributors tonight, Howard, enjoyed your address there. And, you know, I'd say like a couple of others, I could recount incidents, particularly when I was fully involved in the trade union movement, about trade unionists at the time were certainly being monitored fairly closely. So in addition to political parties, we know, and in terms of the SPGB, if we had been monitored, let them do it. You know, I personally don't give a damn if they're, in fact, if anything, they might learn something from us. But certainly in terms of the trade union movement, we were aware in Doncaster, that a company in Doncaster was supplying details of active trade unionists to various employers. It was an employers' organisation, when all said and done. They'd set it up to be able to monitor what they regarded as perhaps, as has been described before, the enemy within the country. And we happened to discover one of these organizations was based in Doncaster at the time, and we actually picketed that workplace for some length of time, and eventually I'm going back 30 odd years now. Quite easily 30-odd years ago when we picketed the workplace and found out what it was doing, was advising employers who the active trade unionists were. And I'm sure other companies have heard of this before. We've seen it at times, trade unionists, etc., getting picked off as agitators. So the state monitoring us it doesn't come as a surprise. You know, I think we've seen that for many, many years. And what other speakers have mentioned earlier on, we've seen it, you know, going back perhaps to the beginning of when the party was founded. But one thing, and I know it might be going slightly off track here, is that in your opening sort of remarks, you spoke, I think, about how Jewish people were, you know, there was looked at people with long noses and so on and so forth. And yet, if you look at it today, I'm sure some of it still goes on, but if you look at it today, and I'm making particular reference to the shooting yesterday, in Manchester, it was a tragic state of affairs, and it shouldn't be happening. But when you hear certainly the politicians coming out and saying how condemning they were of it, and the King and the Queen, and you know, the sort of cohorts of them coming out and condemning what had happened. And this is where we're slightly off track. I just wish I'd heard these same people coming out and talking about what the Israeli state machine was doing to the people in Palestine, that you get one Jewish person killed at a synagogue and everybody's up in arms about it. And I know there's many people up in arms about it, but not one of them, even the chief rabbi, none of them mentioned anything about what the Israeli state machine was doing to the people of Gaza. So when they're talking about killings and such like, but it's just interesting. I draw the parallel because you mentioned how at one point Jewish people were getting singled out. I think it came across to me as that they were getting singled out as being subversives, etc. And yet yesterday we have this other state of affairs. So thoroughly enjoyed the talk. But yeah, I wanted to make that point about the situation in Manchester yesterday. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Well, we can discuss that if we run out of talk or anything else. Darren again, I think. Does anybody know what's happened to Dougie, by the way? I see he's disappeared altogether. Anyway, Darren.
Just to return to the historical issue of infiltration and like spying, maybe we've focused too much on the party itself. Why haven't we left it? But maybe we should also remember like things like Spycatcher, the Peter Wright book from the 80s, the British government made such an effort to ban publication in Britain, obviously pre-internet. And that kind of, you can take the book itself with a pinch of salt, but what has been sort of revealed from other sources, enough different sources for there to be a grain of truth in it, was the absolute paranoia within the upper echelons of the British security, security intelligence, where, the serious, significant and powerful people were convinced that Howard Wilson, for example, was a Russian asset, was a Russian agent, to the extent that they generally believed that Gaitskell, because Gaitskell was a leader before Wilson, the Labour Party, kind of died quite young in relative terms, they'd actually been poisoned by the Russians to allow Wilson to ascend to the leadership of the Labour Party. And obviously this has got as crazy enough that, within the British ruling class, Cecil King, for example, was trying to organise a coup, a military coup against Wilson. I believe it was in the mid to late 60s. So, you can't discount that level of kind of just strangeness and paranoia existing within these organisations. You obviously seep down to where they obviously see like a red under every bed or an Irish terrorist or now a Muslim terrorist. If this is their stock in trade, you can't be surprised when they basically just go too far and basically see, subversives everywhere. So, can't discount stuff like that when we're discussing a subject like this. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Okay, thanks. Andrew again, please.
I just noticed Dougie's back. Does Dougie want to say anything before I have a go? Dougie, unmute yourself and see if you can speak.
Yeah, I can do. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, Dougie. You're on.
I remember years ago talking to Peter Lawrence. He said he got interviewed by MI5 at one point or whatever. And they basically said, "Oh, you're not a threat, really," because he got interviewed, and remember that, really. Yeah. I don't know. If you go on these marches, sometimes you get people taking photographs and things. I remember being at Hyde Park, when some of the speakers were speaking, and you had people from South Africa trying to film our speakers and things. I remember Steve Coleman getting really annoyed with somebody trying to film Clifford Slapper when he was speaking at Hyde Park or whatever. So that kind of thing went on. But I remember on marches, if you're trying to sell the Standard, you get people taking photographs of everybody, really. And I remember years ago, I applied for a job, and when I went there, they started saying things like we'd make rusty nails if they made us a profit and things, and we are proud to be British and all this. And they gave me an interview like that, right? You know, and I'd been writing articles in Grip, which was a student magazine, so I was probably blacklisted to some extent, right? You know, but I don't know how true that was. Maybe it's part of my paranoia or whatever. Okay.
Okay, thanks. Andy?
Yeah, thanks, Dougie. I think that was a good point that you made there, and I hope you can keep well. I suppose what I'm about to say is it's sort of personal, but it's also, I hope, relevant to what Howard's talk was about. I've just started a new job. And it's in the field that I work in. It's in the health and social care sector, like, which is very sort of state sort of oriented, you know, everything you have to do. You're trained to death, you know, basically, you know, you're trained, like, we must be the most trained people ever, like, you know. But one of the things that we have to do is this, I'm sure people here, some of us anyway, will be familiar with it or at least know something about it. It's called prevent training. Yeah. So most of us died in the wool, socialists, communists, etc. We sort of, you know, think about, you know, Reds under the bed, you know, all that sort of thing, you know, the Red Peril, you know, we're dissidents and all that sort of thing on one level. However, you've also then got the other sort of threats that are now available, the Muslim threats, the Islamist threats, the right-wing threats, you know, the right-wing political threats are really starting to come in. So I've done a basic level 2 and level 3 prevent training just recently. But it does seem now as though the authorities are just as interested in people who are likely to be agitators and threats to the state from the right, you know, advisedly I use that word, as they were from the left historically. I use that word advisedly as well, not the historically, but the left advisedly. So that's quite an interesting shift, really, because Howard rightly pointed out that really there's never been in my lifetime, I was born in 1966, there was no real right-wing threat in this country. It was the Tories, really. It was just sort of centre-right, capitalist party, fairly benign, really. And you'd have very, very small kind of weirdos, you know, either probably the National Front and the BNP were the biggest sort of groups that ever existed that I can never remember being around, but that's something that's perhaps now being seen as a new sort of area that the state would be interested in as well. A bit like, everything. The cliche is, you know, if it happens in the United States, it gets transported across the world, and maybe that's where some of those really right wing weirdos in America have, like, you know, sort of transported their ideas over via social media as well. So I don't know, maybe that's just an irrelevant point that I've made, but maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, thanks for listening. Cheers.
Yeah, thanks. I can remember the League of Empire Loyalists was Oswald Mosley had a union movement as well in the the 60s, I think. Anyway, Paddy.
Another aspect of this. I remember years ago, our local branch, we held a public meeting, and it must have been something to do with anarchism, because a load of the local anarchists turned up, and we you know, we got on pretty well with them. We kind of knew them, some of them socially. So at some point, I think I must have put around a sheet of paper saying, you know, if you want to stay in touch for, you know, information about future meetings and all that sort of thing, phone number or email address or something like that. Anyway, none of them wrote their names down. None of them wrote their names. They didn't write their numbers, didn't write email address, nothing. And I said, oh, okay, well, you obviously don't, you know, you don't want to stay in touch or anything like that. And they just looked at me and they said, we're not putting our personal details down on anything like this. What do you think, we're mad? And I went away and I thought about this and I thought, it wasn't because they didn't trust me or the socialist branch. You know, it wasn't because they didn't think, they thought we were somehow kind of in hoc with the state. They were paranoid about giving their information out in case the state got hold of it. And I thought this was really funny because, you know, they were a small group. They weren't any bigger than us. And I thought, well, how conceited of them. How conceited of them to think that they are so important to the British state that the British state would actually go to the trouble of, you know, infiltrating them. I mean, these anarchists, they were, for the most part, they were lifestyle anarchists. They got together, they had a gossip, they went down the pub. That was all they did, you know. And the idea that, you know, they were a danger to the state was a fantasy that was entirely their own creation. And I thought it was really funny. Compared to our own approach, we're very open. And, you know, if we want to be on a contact list, we'll put our details down. And this leads me on to my larger point, which is in the discussion tonight. If there were sort of, you know, newcomers or first-timers here, I think that it would be... they would go away without the sort of clear picture of where the Socialist Party stands on all this. And I think it's worth actually just reminding ourselves what that is, why it is that we have open meetings. Now, we have open meetings because we believe that only open democratic processes can lead to an openly democratic society. That's why we're open. That's why we're above board. That's why we operate by the sorts of rules of open democratic processes. We're not worth infiltrating. I mean, anyone who tried to infiltrate us would get very bored very quickly because there wouldn't be anything for them to do. So there's that. And then there's also the fact that conversely to us, if you look at lots of left-wing organizations like Leninists, or in fact anarchist organizations who are secretive, who are not democratic, because they can't be democratic if they're secretive. They must be some sort of leadership organization. So they're not democratic. But worse than that, whatever it is that they're trying to do or hoping they're going to do to overthrow capitalism, they're much more likely to be targeted by state infiltrators than we are. The more secretive they are, the more interesting they become. So previously people have mentioned that, oh, well, it's a little bit disappointing that we're not as interesting to state infiltrators as other groups. But actually, when you look at how we organise and why we do it that way, it's not really a surprise. And incidentally, I don't think it's because we're somehow harmless, we're somehow less dangerous than these other groups. I don't think any of those groups are dangerous in the slightest, but it's just because they're secretive, they tend to get infiltrated because the state can't afford to take chances. When you see what happened with this lone actor in Manchester yesterday with this synagogue, the state is all over everything that looks suspicious, and you can sort of understand why. But, you know, from the state's point of view, they're going to be interested in anyone or any group that's looking a bit clandestine, that's looking a bit oblique, you know, that's looking a bit like there's something going on behind the scenes. So And this is, as I say, this is why we operate how we do, because we want a democratic revolution. We don't want to do it by secretive, underhand, vanguardist means. So that's kind of, I think that's really kind of the point of, I think, what you were getting at, Howard, with all this talk of, you know, state surveillance. I just felt it needed to be sort of said explicitly. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Do you want to come back again, Dougie? You got your hand up.
I remember years ago going to a meeting in Manchester, thinking it was one of our meetings at the Millstone, and it was I turned up and they told me it was a sub-aqua club meeting, but it was full of Stalinists, right, you know. So they must have been taking up sub-aqua club as a hobby or whatever. So I thought that was quite clandestine or whatever. And I remember years ago, Huey told a story. When they met in a pub, and the people who met before them was the budgie club, and Huey thought it was a front, until one day they all came out with their budgies and cages or whatever. So I don't know. But, I mean, yeah, it was just one of those things. I think the Stalinists can be a bit clandestine or whatever. So, anyway.
Howard, do you want to say something at this point or before I say some anecdotes?
Just say a quick word about what Paddy said. It's true that, you know, if they started to sort of look at us in any great detail, they'd quickly find out that we didn't constitute a threat in their terms. But it will take them a bit to do that. I think that's the thing about the, you know, the character who came, you know, the so-called insurance salesman who came round to the house. He probably sort of twigged quite quickly and therefore, you know, didn't follow it up and started going around other organisations to find out what kind of a threat they constituted. So, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a good thing that we are completely open, that we have open democratic processes and so on, that we foreshadow the kind of society we advocate. But, you know, it's something that it can easily take people a bit of time to find out about, especially if they're not, as David Cowell suggested, sort of that bright or that switched on. Some of them might be, but some of them might not be. Just mention the thing about Peter Lawrence being interviewed by MI5. Not heard that before. Peter Lawrence is a former member, by the way, who died a good number of years ago. He was a very active member in his time. And I wonder whether, was he interviewed at head office? Did somebody come round to his house? Not something I've heard mentioned before, but I'm sure if he was interviewed by MI5, he put them right, and they would sort of, after that, probably cease to be interested.
Actually, can I just intervene there? Because that wasn't the original story. Dougie got the details wrong. It wasn't MI5 that interviewed Peter Lawrence. A policeman came to his door because his branch was going to organise some activity during a demo. And the policeman told Peter Lawrence that the party had been checked by MI5 and assessed as not a threat. So he wasn't given the third degree. It was just a policeman came to the door.
Okay.
Okay, fair enough, Paddy. I got it wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Peter Lawrence's, you know, brother-in-law, you know, Jack Bradley, who was had suspicions about things. He had the argument that the, you know, MI5 could use the party as training for infiltration, because it would be so difficult to fake it to become a member of the party, because you have to pass this entrance exam and answer all the questions correctly. So anyway, that was you know, Jack Bradley's theory as to why they might want to infiltrate us just to train their operatives. But what I was going to say is that I think the point that Dougie mentioned in his first intervention is valid. I think, you know, regularly, if you spoke at Hyde Park, you would be photographed, and I think, you know, similarly on demonstrations. I mean, I went to one, you know, fairly recently. It was against the arms trade or something. And somebody said, can I take a photo of you? And I thought, oh, well, I said, well, and he claimed to be some sort of solidarity thing with Palestine or something. And he was from that part of the world. So he had a plausible thing, but I'm sure he was working there taking photographs of all sorts of people. But there was a Liberal MP, some years ago who won a court case to have the right to see the file which MI5 would have on him. I mean, he won his case, but I don't think he's ever been allowed to see the file, because I mean, you know, I wrote to him and said, look, how do you get to see the file? Because I'm sure I'm on the file from having spoken in Hyde Park and being photographed. But he said nothing's happened. So he went upon a principle that you can ask to see the file that they have on you, but you won't get it. But, okay, Jarvis, I see you're on.
Oh my goodness me! I wasn't expecting it that quickly. Thank you, Adam. That was very polite. Now I'm caught on the hop. Yeah. So I mean, I just wanted to reiterate the point I made earlier. You know, we're not a threat until we are. And that's really important. By the time we actually become a threat, it'll be too bloody late for them to do anything about it. But what I actually wanted to do was to ask if any party members have read this book, Goliath's Curse by Luke Kemp. And my final question is, I'd like to give a talk on that book because I think it's really important. And will I have to rejoin the party in order to do that?
No, but when do you want to do this talk? I'm looking for people to do a talk in November and December.
I need a month.
A month, okay. Well, sometime in...
Howard's ready. Yeah, so I'd like to share what I think about this book about a month from now, and I'll book the night off work to do it.
Okay, thanks.
Can I just say, I've got it. Got it very recently, just a week or two ago. I'm not ready yet. I got it with a view probably to doing a review in the Standard. The trouble is it's nearly 600 pages long.
Oh, my me. Honestly, Howard, I'm not even halfway through.
Okay. It occurs to me that if you're going to read it, go to the trouble of reading it and giving a talk on it, maybe you could be the one who does the review for the Standard.
Oh, well, that would mean rejoining the party, wouldn't it? Which I...
No, you can write for the Standard without being a member of the party.
Never used to be the case.
No, it's never been that, has it? Right. Am I right?
I'm sure it has, Howard.
Am I not right to say that, Adam, non-party members can write for... If what they write is acceptable, so to speak?
That has happened, and it can happen again, yes. That's it.
Right, okay. Well, I mean, you know, as you know, comrades, I'm really busy with work and stuff like that, and I don't have social hours, but I never stop ceaselessly working for socialism. I would love to do that review. I'm actually going to send off my Form A in the morning. On which subject, Howard? My partner, who I've lived with now for 3 years, lifelong Labour Party member, but she resigned after Keir Starmer, was and still is interested in the party. I bet her that she could not join the Socialist Party of Great Britain without filling in a Form A. She filled in the Form A with help from artificial intelligence. She could have been an MI5 employee.
Sorry, when you say the Form A, do you mean the questionnaire?
Yeah.
I see, yeah. An interesting one, that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Now, I said to her, you would not last one SPGB meeting without being exposed as a reformist shitwit. And she would not. She'd be immediately expelled. Okay, my Form A is coming shortly.
But you can, since you're living in Cumberland, or whatever it's called now, your local branch is in Lancaster. So send it to Paddy. It doesn't have to go through Howard.
Well, every time I say to Paddy, when's the next meeting, he says, you tell me when you're coming and I'll organise one.
Anyway,
we're very relaxed in Lancaster.
So, yeah, I know that. I've been there.
Okay, we've got somebody new on to speak now. Steve.
Yeah, this thing that Jervis has just mentioned about AI, I think that's entirely possible that we could get people. And in fact, I think it's been mentioned to me by one of the membership application committee members that they suspect they've seen it once. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm misremembering that. But this is partly why I put to Manchester branch the topic for the October planning meeting about having this idea about having ad hoc online meetings for new applicants, partly because of that, so that we don't get people just filling in using AI or copying bits out of the standard or something like that. If we talk to them beforehand, I think that's the reason. So filter out the people that haven't got any sort of real socialist ideas, and also possibly correct any faulty ideas that they've got, but as well making it as close as we can for them at the moment to the branch meetings. Where we'd have an examination committee. We'd have them coming in for 2 or 3 weeks before, or longer before people applied. I think this AI is, but perhaps we've got Owen and who else is Paul? Is Paul still in? No. Maybe it was Howard who told me about this AI. I don't know. Don't remember. Anyway, that's it. Sorry, rambling.
Was it you, Howard?
No, I'm not aware of that at all, actually. No.
Might have been Gary Cornwell then.
Yeah, but I mean, I think some people during COVID had nothing else to do except to fill in the form, because a lot of the people who joined during that period just joined that. We never heard anything else from them. I don't think it was necessarily, pernicious or anything. They were just doing it as a prank. Oh, Andy, you're on next.
Yeah, just very quickly. I've spoken quite a lot already. So, first of all, I'm very pleased that Jarvis is reapplying, and that's I think his credentials are well known. But the other thing that I do actually... I'm, usually fairly polite, I think, most of the time. But I do feel strongly, and this is partly to do with my own personal experience of joining the party. I was put right through the mill to become a member, and it did me good, And I was concerned a few years ago. I was on the EC. I wasn't a very good EC member, but I was on the EC. And we had to review applications. Now, I know that Howard will probably disagree with me on this, but I do honestly think it's better to make it not so easy for people to be approved for membership, because otherwise you end up just... I know Howard's attitude. I don't want to speak for Howard, really, but I mean, my impression is that Howard thinks, get them in, and then we'll mould them. And I'm not so sure that works, really. I've just got to be honest about that. Howard, shoot me down in flames if you want to. So that's okay. But I like what I'm hearing on this, and I agree with what Steve Finch has said on that as well. So thanks, guys. Thank you.
Jarvis, your hand up deliberately or...
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I just wanted to make the point that my partner, wife, person that I've now lived with for all 3 years and who I have tried and failed to convince of the case for socialism, it's an ongoing battle. She knows it's a lovely idea, but she thinks it's never going to work. The battle goes on. I wanted, and thank you, Andy, for talking about how important it is to become a member of the SPGB. I remember in 1986 filling in my Form A, and I went to Birmingham branch with my Form A. Now, bear in mind, at this point, I've been reading the Socialist Standard for over 10 years, and it was always in the house. And Ron Cook was the, insofar as we have presiding members of branches, or had, he was that one. Lewis Higgins was there, Pete Faultless was there, and it's my Form A. And Lou says, look, as far as I'm concerned, his dad was a member of the party, though it turns out, historically, he never actually joined, but he's responsible for me being a socialist, up to a point. Ron says, well, actually, I think it's really important that people are admitted to the party. And so I'm echoing what Andy just said there. I think it is important. We need to know for sure that anybody who joins the party is, in fact, a socialist. I'm a socialist. I have been for many, many years. I don't think there's going to be any problem with my Form A. Andy also mentioned, and this is why I'm putting my hand up again, serving on the EC. I did that too. Adam, you will remember this. I was shit as an EC member. I'm never doing that again. I'm an activist, not a committee member. I love and respect the SPGB EC. I just don't want to be a part of it. So there, that's pretty much all I've got to say. Form A in the post. Oh, no, Form A on the internet.
Okay, well, we'll welcome you at the next meeting then. Anyway, anybody? Oh, by the way, do you know what happened to Pete Faultless?
Yeah, I think it was you that told me, Adam, about 6 or 8 months ago. Yeah, he's now a member of Reform UK. Well, let me tell you something. I'm going to Birmingham next week on my motorcycle, and I'm going to be searching him down. I'm going to hunt him. And if I find him, he's got a lot of explaining to do.
He's somewhere in Walsall. Anyway, Walsall, anybody else got to say anything? We're getting near 9 o'clock now. So if nobody does, Howard, do you want to sort of sum up?
Well, we've got off the subject a bit, haven't we? Yeah. But never mind. It's been interesting, I don't know if I've got anything else to say about are we being spied on? Are we or aren't we? Does it matter? I suppose that's the other question. Does it matter if we're being spied on or not? Because it's not going to make any difference either to the powers that be or to us. But it's nevertheless, it sort of remains an interesting topic. I think with that, I would say, let's close the meeting and just find out what's going to be on next week first.
Okay, well, what's going to be on next week is the meeting that was postponed from a couple of weeks ago. It's Darren Poynton talking on optimistic and pessimistic fatalism. I don't know whether that's a philosophical thing or about the party. That's oh, by the way, I'm looking for somebody to do the talk not next, the week after, on have you heard the news or have you read the news. So that's the week after, which is a vacant slot at the moment. Right. Okay, well, thank you, Howard. It was an interesting subject and an interesting discussion, and it's been recorded.
Yeah, thanks, Howard. Yeah.